This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Come get some. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. With me this week is Greg Miller.
Scoop!
Colin Moriarty is here.
Bunk heads.
And Slim JD himself.
Hey, guys.
Justin Davis is here.
I forgot you were getting that going.
Yeah, we're going to get people on board.
I like it. Looks good on you.
JD Slim. But what I was saying was I'm sort of just medium. Like, if I were very skinny, then that would work. Or if I were very fat, you could do it ironically.
So you gotta make a choice. Right. You got to go. Which way are you going to go?
Probably fat, if I'm being honest.
Very good. Lots of big news to talk about today. That stuff broke over the night, and stuff just broke just now. I don't know. Should we start with Nintendo stuff or Mass Effect 3 stuff?
I think the Gatorade. You're drinking Gatorade. That usually means you had a good night last night.
Well,
that's what I want to know about. These damn video games.
Gatorade is a wonderful invention.
It's hell of a drug. I hope
whoever made Gatorade got the Nobel Peace Prize, because they're amazing.
The University of Florida did not get the Nobel Peace Prize, I don't think.
The University of Florida?
Gatorade. They're the Gators.
What is that? They didn't make Gatorade, though.
Yeah, they did.
Really?
Yeah.
They invented it.
Everybody got so dehydrated on their team, water wasn't cutting it.
Wow. I know that from that commercial.
We all know it from the sports commercial. Damon doesn't know, because he's making his music.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, Mass Effect 3. We just found out that new extended Mass Effect 3 ending is coming next week.
All, like, was it 2.9 gigabytes or 1.9 gigabytes?
Yeah. Almost 9 gigs. It's 2 gigs.
See, that's already my confusion about this. How many hours now do I have to investigate the new ending? What do I have to do?
You have to start from the Cerberus
Assault. Yeah, so you already beat the game, right?
Yeah. Speaking of which, I need you to bring the game back in so I can play this.
Okay, I haven't beat it yet.
It's too late. You had how many months to do it?
I know. Is this going to be spoilers or spoiler-free?
Well, I haven't beaten the game yet, so let's try to keep it.
As spoiler-free as you can. Yeah. But an easy place to pick up from?
No. I don't know. I mean...
What the hell are you talking about? Yeah. I thought you just all yelled out the Cerberus Assault.
Okay.
Do you know if you have a save from then?
I mean, I made multiple saves, so hopefully I have a save around wherever I need to go.
I usually just keep 3 saves.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
I know why you do that, I think. Is it from the old Super Nintendo or even Nintendo RPGs in which you had 3 slots in which to
use? Maybe I just got used to that, I just never think I need 100 save files, I just keep 3 and I figure that'll be enough.
No, but 3 is good. Like, you have your most recent one, then you have one a little bit back in case your most recent one's effed.
Yeah.
And then you have one a ways back. It's just like a safety.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I used to just keep 1.
Oh, yeah. Look at this.
That's dangerous.
I'm already living on the edge.
And then Fallout 3.
Ready to help yourself from falling.
Oh, Eric's Aerosmith. All right?
Well, not that's not the best era. That's not Aerosmith's best.
No, big ones, big ones. Their best LP to date.
You were really like I planned that joke, but you were right. You were right there to pick it up.
You planned that one.
Well, like I planned it
you like last night. Like, yeah,
last night. I got it. I got it.
Got to work this in at some point. Living on the edge.
Anyway, who was saying?
Colin
who
only had one save file, is what he used to say.
Oh, yeah. And then what happened? And then I got screwed in the game.
Was it a Bethesda game?
Yes.
So, it's Syndicate. Tuesday, June 26th. It's free download on Xbox 360,
right.
PlayStation cool. 3, and PC. Yeah, we know that it's like... I don't think it's... I don't know how interactive it is.
I don't think it is.
I think it's just stuff that you watch, but it's based... They did say it's based on decisions that you've made throughout the Mass Effect series.
Yeah. So here's my question, and I actually didn't get a chance to read this news before you had to hop in the podcast room. So
you heard Goldfarb screaming about it.
That's very true. But so have they talked about whether – are they admitting that this is content they planned, or is this a response to the people saying that
I think
they weren't happy with the ending?
Obviously a response. I mean, mm-hmm. they haven't come out and – I mean,
okay.
You know. But the wording of their press release is very much like – you know, it will tell you more about the future of Commander Shepard. It will be based. Mm. It will reveal more about the successes and failures you experienced in rallying people to your cause. All that sort of stuff. I mean, what people were complaining that the ending didn't take into account the decisions you've made throughout the series, like they were told, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that's
yeah.
why people were upset. And the wording of the press release today is very much like, yes, now the decisions you've been making all this time, you will get to see different. You'll get to see different. Scenarios play out in different ways with the
yeah.
extended cut.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, it almost certainly has to be a response to the outcry from fans, because otherwise, let's say this was their plan. Like, what kind of a plan is that?
I know. We're going to release the game, yeah. and then months later, we're going to release the extended cut. I know.
Endings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it's possible. I mean, maybe they planned on, like, charging for some sort of epilogue DLC or something. Like, oh, you get 4 more playable hours, then you get to see how everything is resolved.
I'm just, like, so... I don't want to play again. I don't yeah. want to play the. Yeah. I don't want to play yeah. the ending again. Maybe I'll just wait and see what people post in the wiki. Yeah. I'll just wait for all the videos to hit YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube.
I'm sure, Destin will have all the videos up in like 3 seconds.
I think. Yeah,
Destin Legary.
I think someone like me will be an interesting case because now I'm only like halfway through the game. So when I eventually do beat it, I'm just going to experience this extended ending.
So it saves over the ending. The original game ending is now overwritten by this free DLC.
Yeah, is that canonical anymore? Like,
I think those are still the endings, we think. There's just more to them now as far as...
But aren't those endings... So I actually haven't played Mass Effect 3, but I know roughly what the endings are. Yeah. Aren't they radically different from one another?
No, that's the whole problem. Oh. That's the whole problem, is but that I there's three incredibly similar endings.
Well, okay, fuck it. Let's make this a spoiler cast. I thought in okay. some...
Hey, wait, when we talk about you close my ears? Like, what?
This okay, is my okay, podcast. Okay. Never mind. I just thought that a major character, major, either lived or died, and I don't understand how they can work that into, like, if they're extending the DLC, extending the ending.
Well, I think the extending is going to be, like, I'm not spoiling anything for Damon or any mm-hmm. listeners at home. The three endings, kind of four, are all incredibly similar.
Okay.
So I think extending them would be now, at the end, you would get... some extra cutscenes in there about extra characters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, Liara is running an orphanage.
Exactly. We made an Up at Noon joke about it, where it was like the end of Stand By Me, where everybody walked out, Destin did a thing, and it'll be like that. That's what I'm predicting it'll be. Okay. Is that it will be like, you know, hopefully not just text on a screen, but something saying like, and this is what happened to these people, and this is what happened to these people, and that's what happened to those, and blah blah blah.
Colin Moriarty's being very quiet.
Everyone knows where I stand on this.
Well, I know, but I mean, well, this is a new development.
Hey, Colin,
you know?
Where do you stand on this?
Like, you know, you are a respected member of the video game community. You can totally share your thoughts and feelings on this issue.
Oh, I think. You know? Well, I'm disappointed that they did this at all, but I also understand that this is probably not going to please everyone, and it's probably just going to and the complaining will probably just continue. So,
well, okay, but it's a free download, right? Yeah. So, like,
Colin actually makes a great point where, like, this might almost be like they're trying to like quell a fire, but it's really just going to flame it, and maybe people aren't going to like what they get, or like, oh, I didn't. Well, maybe it was better not knowing, and like wasn't as good as
that's what it is. Is people? I think a lot, and this is again, ladies and gentlemen, we have not played it, we don't know anything about it. My prediction. Is that the endings we already saw are going to stand, but then there will be extra things added in about.
That's what it seems like.
And if that's what they do, that doesn't solve a lot of people's problems with what happened.
Yeah,
that would be the one thing they'd have to do it in a really weird way without spoiling anything, where they brought all of the three endings that are different enough, but all very similar, back to one point to then branch out again.
Right. So they're building on top of a foundation that people already don't like.
Yeah. And I think people, when people were protesting and had the petitions and stuff, they wanted, from what I took away from it, kind of a completely new ending of, like, a completely new base, like foundation, like you're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know if this happens.
So, Colin, let's assume, I don't know, in 60 seconds, what's your beef with what's going on here? What's, why are you not happy with this situation?
It's just, I don't like the idea of people. I like, let me start again. There are a lot of things I don't like.
I'm resetting the
timer.
There
are a lot of things I don't like.
Uh-huh.
And
liberals?
Yes, for instance.
Okay.
No, I do like liberals fine.
You like all of us?
Yeah, I'm only kidding.
The liberal agenda.
Well, I want to make sure people know that.
My mom and my sisters also. I don't like that. Like bleeding heart liberals. No, I don't like that people took it as far as they did.
Yeah.
And I think that, there are plenty of examples of fiction and books and movies and games where I didn't like what I saw and I didn't like what I found. But I would never, ask them to, after the product had already come out, after it's already on the shelf, after everyone already played it, their vision is finalized, to say, like, I don't like this, and I want you to change it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I just don't know how that's constructive for our industry. And I don't like that people also use, like, disingenuous, really incorrect examples of other games doing this. And the famous example, of course, is Fallout 3. Mm-hmm. Fallout 3 changed its ending so you can play its DLC. It didn't change its ending so that, because people complained about it, because in fact people liked Fallout 3's ending.
Yeah.
Because, spoilers, the game's 4 years old, you die. So in order to be able to play the game after you beat it, in which some people didn't have saves, and they can release Operation Anchorage and the Pit and all these things, they were like, well, we have to change the ending because we need to make the game playable.
And that also doesn't really help. Like, people pointing at that and saying, that's why it's okay to change Mass Effect's ending. It's like changing Fallout 3's ending made it kind of terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it gave no finality to it. Yeah. But I understood why they did it, because they wanted to sell you DLC, and that's totally fine, and I had no problem with that. I mean, whatever. It was, like, kind of an error they realized afterwards, in that, like, they never made... In other words, they should have given you... they should have given you... there should have been an autosave at the beginning of the assault on Jefferson Memorial, and instead it saves, like, when it's too late. And I understood that was the thing they probably could have patched, but it was just too late at that point.
It was what it was. It's a bad example for the Mass Effect.
So to me, it's like, okay, people were upset, and of course, Greg and I, bitched and moaned about Infamous 2's coal design, which was a thing that blew up on the internet or whatever. And to me, I only say that, if first of all, the game hadn't come out yet. Second of all, I didn't demand that they change anything. Third, I would have still played and enjoyed Infamous 2 if they didn't change him.
Yeah.
But with that said, I appreciate that BioWare listened to the fans, or whatever. But I also understand that it was not a huge group of people, and I still contend that most of the people that played Mass Effect have no idea that this whole fiasco even existed.
I think that's very true. And, you hit on something that I want to make sure we sort of highlight and reiterate. You brought up a good, interesting point that there's a big difference between not liking something or hating something, saying I really, really dislike this, and that's not the same as saying you need to change this or I want this changed. Like, that's a weird, like, final extra step to take.
I think, or feeling like you deserve more, you deserve something different, you know?
Right.
I think that's something that left a bad taste in people's mouths about the reaction to Mass Effect.
Well, you might want more, feel like you deserve more, but
the whole the big part of this, and the interesting part of it, right, is that we always have this tug-of-war argument somewhere, and people always, a question on Up at Noon or any show is, are games art? You know what I mean? And are they? And how many books get released that then the fan base demands that you have to change this. This isn't how I expected the story to end, blah, 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 blah. And then the authors go back and do it. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where it feels like as you would need to stand strong as an industry kind of thing. You know what I mean? It's Casey Hudson and BioWare to say, this was our vision for the game. We're sorry you didn't like it there, blah, 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 blah. But instead they got here and now it's all wavery. And now we have to ask the questions. Was this DLC already planned or is it in response to these people?
No, I don't think
what
DLC
does that do
planned.
To the next game that ends that way? Well, you know what I mean? What about when Red Dead 2 comes out and people aren't happy with the ending and then blah, blah, blah.
But video games have always been different. Like, you think about stuff, especially in modern times, with the internet, games like Minecraft and there's dozens of examples of games that their direction literally zigs and zags based on what the community wants.
But that's, evolving thing, right?
But that doesn't happen in movies and books.
Exactly. And the other interesting thing to point out is I think this is all brand new territory, expanding the boundaries. There is, I don't think there's a right and wrong. Mm-hmm. I just think it's something interesting that is unique to the video game industry that, there are, you get Minecraft's in beta forever and they listen to people and they change this and they do that. You know, Naughty Dog puts out Uncharted, then they do the lab and they're like, they try all this new stuff and see what people like and then put out that as the real DLC.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's and that is something that's unique to our medium. Maybe I guess maybe like television and some stuff might you know take fan input into account. But generally speaking, you know, you have some video games that are this is our product, boom, that's it, it's done forever. And you have some that are the opposite, that are living, breathing products. And it's interesting that you know Mass Effect is kind of both. You know, it's in this, it's straddling by listening to fans and having this epilogue DLC. You know, it's sort of doing something new.
It's, I think, you know, people, this has been something we've kicked around in GameScoop forever and, you know, blogs and whatever, and it's been such a story. I think what's interesting and why maybe, you know, games journalists, I used air quotes, you didn't see, get so, like, their hair raises about it in a lot of ways.
Their hackles.
I had a conversation a few months ago with a developer, and I was sitting down with him, and I was talking about blah, blah, and he was lamenting how they put out this game, it had reviewed well, everything had gone well, but then in comments, people were tearing them apart, and people would tweet at them, and they were getting kicked around, like, in comments, and how much that weight on them, and if they made the wrong choices, this, that, and the other. And I think is, you know, us, right? We always say don't feed the trolls or whatever, blah, blah, blah. You put up an article, and then regardless of how many millions of people read it, there's going to be 30 comments on it about how much you suck or blah, blah, blah. Maybe that's just me. But you know, how much you suck and how you're a terrible reviewer and yada, yada. And we've learned to tune that out. And developers, you know, work on a game for 2.5, 3 years, whatever, they put it out, and that's their big coming out party. And then when people get bent out of shape about it, I don't know if they have the you know 2020 vision to see that that's a very small sect of the audience who's upset at that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
and so you don't want to see them all reacting to what just the most vocal people are saying, because millions or whatever, thousands of people have bought that game. They didn't share those feelings, but the kids who are most motivated to go on and be upset, and usually the ones who are the most motivated are the ones that are upset and mad and want to yell at you.
Yeah, that's a really, really hard thing to deal with. That's something that I think, you know, anyone that's listening out there, and that I always try to keep in mind as well. People think about video game companies as these gigantic entities, and BioWare is gigantic. I don't know how many people it employs, but it's huge.
Four.
At least
you got Dr. Ray, you got the Casey Hudson,
a baker's dozen. I'm gonna say, and so, but it is they're these huge organizations, but they're also, it's just people, right? It's all staffed by human beings, and it doesn't feel good to have, you know, controversy and have people bagging on you.
Yeah, they worked on those games. They worked on Mass Effect 3 for X number of years, not to mention the entire franchise that they've been working on forever. And this is their giant moment, their complete thing, and they put it out, and their most loyal fans are suddenly, or what seems to be their most loyal fans,
for right
are
or wrong.
On the boards, saying things.
Yeah.
That hurts.
I think people are totally in the right if they want to be upset about the ending. Like, I actually understand why people are upset about the ending. I personally wasn't upset about the ending. I actually really liked the ending.
Yeah.
And I remember standing up at my desk when I beat it before a week or two
really
before the game came
out.
I was like, this is awesome. Like, I love the way this game ended. It just, like, punches you in the face, and I like that, you know? And a lot of people didn't like it. I know people that did. But I also, you know, I think it's a perception issue. And that's kind of what I realized over the months since this kind of broke, which is that, we talk about it's a small group of people. But that doesn't necessarily mean that their qualms are not important or whatever. It just means that it's the same, you know, it's the same thing as like EA being voted the worst company in the world or whatever it was. It's like, give me a fucking break, you know, like that just even proved the point even more to me, actually, that it's like, it's probably the same group of people.
Yeah.
So that want to blame EA for BioWare, somehow forcing BioWare to make an ending that they didn't like or whatever.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's about artistic vision. There were, of course, books in the past. Of course, Sherlock Holmes is a great example in which Sherlock Holmes came back after he died or whatever, I think. And that was over, you know, fan protests and things like this have happened in the past. There are examples, notably Ray Bradbury, in which people wanted him to change things. And he was like, absolutely not. So, you know, I would have respected BioWare much more if they just were like, you know, like Greg said, this is the decision. This is our game. We're sorry. We're really sorry you don't like it. And that's what I was trying to tell people, you know, which is that if you really are mad, if you're really that mad about it, if you really are that mad at BioWare and that mad at EA, don't buy EA games anymore. Don't buy the next Mass Effect game, because there will be another Mass Effect game. Don't buy the next BioWare game, Dragon Age 3 or whatever. Don't buy any EA games. Speak with your wallet. I think that's the most appropriate way to do it.
I totally agree. Like, I didn't like the ending of Battlestar Galactica. You know, I don't like freak out about it and petition the internet and demand a change. But
you refuse to watch Edward James Olmos. No,
but I was saying, like, next time I hear, like, the next series from the creator of Battlestar Galactica, I might think, I don't know that I need to check that out, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe I do, maybe I don't. At least, that's my response to it.
Yeah, and that's the way I feel about everyone attached with Lost. I started to hate Lost so much. Like, in the last season, I never even finished it.
Oh, man.
You don't finish it.
I never finished it.
Save yourself the trouble. I went and read about it.
You guys are assholes. I'm like, it's exactly what everyone said it was, and they lied about it.
Season two, yeah.
That's cool. But, yeah, I didn't go online and be like, you must get everyone back together and refilm the last season of Lost to make it better. It's like, no, I'm just, anything with Lindelof's name on it or J.J. Abrams or anything, I'm totally wary about it now. That's it.
Just be wary about it. Going forward, maybe you won't share your money with these people. Like, that's the response.
Money talks.
I think I'm the only person in this office that loved Lost.
Maybe now. Hillary loved the ending to Lost, but he's not, you know.
Oh, man, I loved it. Him and I should
I loved row Lost down. Up until the final season.
Why the fuck isn't he the smoke monster all the time?
That was a great. I think that's in a game scoop.
That is in a game scoop. The tie Hillary smoke monster argument.
I will say this, though, Damon, is that I totally love that people are passionate about games, because I'm passionate about games, and totally complain about the games you don't like, and totally say why you don't like them, and have constructive conversations, but like was already said, I think we have to respect that it's someone's vision, and even though you might not be able to take your money back from their hands once you've bought that particular product, there's always another time, and there's always, that publisher's always going to make another game, and that developer's always usually going to work on something else, and those people will move on to another team, and you follow these people around, and you either give them your money or you don't, and so ultimately, everything kind of pans out, and this was not the way it should have been done, and I stand by that, you know? I could have articulated it much better.
Are you gonna check out the stuff?
No.
No. Okay.
No intention of playing the new ending.
It sounds like it's a pack of cutscenes, but you're only going to see certain ones based on the decisions you made.
Okay.
Yeah, mark my words, this is going to make it worse for some people. Maybe not everyone, but I think because it seemed, I mean, even to me, and just reading a lot of the conversations, obviously a lot of people were mad at me personally, and so I got in a lot of conversations, learned a lot about what people were upset about, and it wasn't only about the ending. So there's just plot holes generally, I think, right? I mean, isn't that kind of the...
Oh, yeah, there's plot holes in the ending.
So I don't think that this is necessarily going to solve the problem for the most ardent Mass Effect fans that are angry about this, and I think... You know, I just hope that this doesn't lead us down a slippery slope.
And that's the big thing of why I think, people won't be happy, is I think there were so many plot holes. I don't know how you patch them all into this way to make sense and keep the old endings as well.
It's 2 gigs, Greg.
That's a lot of gigs.
That is a lot of gigs.
What happened to the squid people?
the jellyfish guys.
Hanar?
Yeah, the Hanar, right. Good job.
Well, the Mass Effect 3 Extended Cut is out Tuesday, June 26th. It's free, so I look forward to checking out someday whenever I actually
Mass Effect 3. I
really like Mass Effect 3. Like, it's just like that is a really fun game, you know. Like, story aside, just playing the game, the combat is really fun. I think it's
the best Mass Effect game. I like
I'm
that game
setting an alarm for Sunday night to text you to bring back Mass Effect.
That's
on Monday.
That's good. That's a good call. Also, over the evening, Nintendo announced a new 3DS. The 3DS XL. It's bigger.
It's really big.
It's much bigger, yeah.
You remember, of course, the DSi XL. Mm-hmm. I don't know how well that actually sold, but I mean, I guess it was well enough to convince them to do the same thing with 3DS.
Yeah. And it's also redesigned. It's not just like the same thing, but bigger. Like the clamshell and stuff is a different design, sort of like the DS Lite. Mm.
How much is the 3DS now? Do we know?
160?
Because this one's 200. It's out August 19th, the same day as New Super Mario Bros. 2.
Yeah.
Anybody here looking to pick it up?
Yes.
Yeah?
Maybe.
Well, so I'm thinking about it, because in the DS family, I've owned the DS, the DS Lite, and the DSi. I don't own a 3DS yet. First of all, I don't know why the hell I bought a DSi. That's anyone's guess.
A DSi?
Yeah, I bought a DSi the day it came out.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
It was totally fucking useless. I have no idea why I bought that thing. That's what I was still excited about, Nintendo handhelds. But then I didn't buy a 3DS, and I definitely want to play New Super Mario Bros. 2. I'm, like, super excited about that game.
Yeah.
But, like, it's... And I want to buy this new extra huge 3DS, but it seems like it's fucking enormous. Like, and just kind of thinking about it conceptually. I might have to buy the... I might. So I'm still going to buy New Super Mario Bros. 2, but I might have to buy the standard 3DS. Yeah,
I was thinking about the same thing. That's a decision I'm going to make this fall. So the new screens, the top and bottom screens, are about 190% bigger.
No. They're 90% bigger.
That's what I meant. They're almost twice as big, though, what I'm getting at. Drop the 100. 90% bigger. And that's really significant. Like, the DS XL was not that big of a jump.
But the screens are the same resolution.
Right. Resolution.
So there's an issue.
I'd want to hold it, see how it looks before I buy it.
So I'm ready to get on the 3DS train. I kind of have been for a while, but I was waiting for something like this. But I don't know that this is quite. Yeah, I'm curious about the screens. I'm curious about how big it is. Well, I don't care about how big it is because for actual, it's good. For actual handheld gaming, I play mobile games like on the train. Like the 3DS would be a system I play at home. So, it can be as big as it doesn't matter. So,
sure.
But I am curious about the screens. I don't like the bigger price. So I might just buy a 3DS because that'll, presumably drop even more from 160, right? Like, it has to.
Yeah, I assume so.
Like, if the 3DS drops like 120 or something, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's nice and affordable.
I would like to play New Super Mario Bros. 2 very much. Is the library outside of that strong enough to get a 3DS now?
I want Fire Emblem.
Mario Kart 7.
Yeah. Fire Emblem would be good, yeah.
Professor Layton.
Yeah, Layton. I mean, yeah, those are three.
See, Mario Kart is, I love playing Mario Kart multiplayer, so I don't know how often, right? So it's how often are you playing multiplayer
or 3DS? Go far with you whenever you want.
Yeah, I know.
Mario Kart on DS was like definitive Mario Kart. It was so good.
Yeah,
it was great.
Yeah.
Luigi's Mansion's coming up.
Yeah,
you got the old Super Mario from December. I forget which one. I'm excited for Paper Mario.
Yeah,
whenever they get that together,
maybe it's time to get a 3DS.
I
want to hold this new 3DS XL. See how it feels. Looks.
That's the thing. Rich will probably get one, and so we'll be able to test the waters.
Now, I don't have a Vita yet either, so I'm kind of eyeing them both, and I'm waiting for I don't know what specifically I'm waiting for. Something to push me over the edge.
You really, really want to play?
Yeah.
God, Castlevania. I mean, that Castlevania game could be cool, but I just want.
What a dumb
fucking
name.
Metroidvania game.
Castlevania Lords of Shadow, Mirrors of Fate.
Two colons.
I'm surprised it's not Mirror of Fates.
Yeah.
Like Demon Souls.
What was that card battling game on the Xbox? Phantom Brave. Phantom something.
You're not thinking of Cul-de-Sac Saga?
I don't know, no. The 3D one, it was, and then you had a deck of cards and you could fight, and it was sort of this cult classic on the original Xbox.
Oh, original Xbox. I'm not sure, but I like card battle games quite a bit.
For some reason, that game's been on my mind lately, and it seems like it would be a good fit for Vita.
Mm.
I'm sad I can't remember the name of it.
Speaking of card battle games, I'm playing Magic the Gathering Duels of the Planeswalkers 2013 now, and it's great.
Yeah, so am I.
Are you playing it on iPad?
Yeah.
So I play it on Xbox, but you like it on iPad too?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played it on the console, so I can't compare, but the touch interface is totally fine. You just drag, when you're attacking, you just drag the creature over to what you want to attack, what player you want to attack, or which creature, and, no problems yet.
My love for Magic the Gathering might be the nerdiest thing about me.
That's fun.
It's great.
I used to play Magic the Gathering a little bit, but I could never... I heard that... I was talking about this with someone in the office. Yeah, Micah. I was just saying, when I was a kid and I played that, and I also played the Star Wars customizable card game in middle school.
Yeah.
And those games were unbalanced because, if you just didn't have any money, which I didn't because I was spending it on video games, then you kind of had, a weak deck and, you couldn't really play well. So, when we would meet at the mall or something to play at the food court or, whatever the fuck nerdy things we would do.
Right.
I would just get beat all the time. So, I heard that the gaming iterations of these games are a little
That's the whole thing.
Balanced.
So you have pre-constructed decks, or everybody's pulling from the same library of cards.
Maybe it was you that I was talking to about this.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just play them single player. You like the bosses that they throw at you. They have their own different. They have unique play styles, unique decks of their own.
So it's like a Pokemon master in a gym.
It is kind of the gym leader.
No, but even if you do play on the internet, you don't spend more money to get more cards. The more you play, you sort of unlock cards that are added to your pool of cards, and you can use that pool to construct a deck. And so everyone is starting from the same. It eliminates that problem that you have with Magic, that everyone had with Magic the Gathering. We all got beat by the rich kids,
Damn rich kids.
Yeah.
The rich nerds.
And then
I'm so rich, I had people playing my deck for me.
And the way you were supposed to play Magic the Gathering was ante a card beforehand. You're gambling one card, and then you just lose more and more and lose more and more of your cards. And It sucked.
They give you the hard in the video game. They give you the hard sell on the real world version. They're like, now you learned how to play. Now find a local magic group in your area. IRL.
Every single loading screen is like, learn more about magic. What are they? Magic Fridays? Something Fridays?
Magic Fridays is a thing apparently.
That's cool. I mean, I heard Sony was talking about how Planeswalkers 2012 was one of the biggest games on PSN last year. So yeah. I would love it to come to PlayStation Vita. That would be a good
one. That makes too much sense.
That's true. That's a good point. It would probably cost $25.
Yeah. More downloadable game news to discuss before we get to listener mail. Cine Mora, we knew it was coming to... what was that?
Vita.
The Vita, yes. Yep. We saw that at E3. It looks absolutely gorgeous. And now we learned it's coming to PSN as well. Right. Yep. So that'll be very cool.
Yeah.
It's been out on XBLA for several months. I reviewed it. Loved it. Really great shooter. Beautiful shooter.
You give it an 8?
I think I give it a 9.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it's cool. I played it on Vita at E3, and it was a lot of fun. A lot of cool E3, small Vita bite-sized games at E3, rather, that I think people are going to be excited about. That game Sunflowers is going to be cool.
It's going to be good. I don't know if it'll be cool.
Well, it won't be cool, it'll be good.
I don't want you to set the bar too high.
Okay.
I think it's going to be fun.
No, okay. But
then pinball, cool. That would be cool.
Good is better than cool.
No, they're different. What?
They're different. Yeah.
What do you mean, what?
I'm looking at a good, like, 7.0 good, and then cool, I would say, is getting it close to an 8.
Oh, okay. I wasn't even really looking at cool as something that was on the scale.
There's a lot of hidden...
Because
hidden.
Naughty Bear is fucking cool as hell.
Oh, fuck you.
So wait, I don't want to dwell on this too much, but if two games, one game was described as good, one game was described as cool, you would play the cool game, not the good game?
Oh, absolutely.
Not me.
Think of them as girls. Which girl do I want to date? The good girl or the cool girl?
Oh, that's a great one. Nice. You just flip script.
Yeah.
Nice.
Now what are you going to do?
I don't like that analogy.
I gave Cine Mora a 9 on Xbox, but what I did give an 8 was Quantum Conundrum.
Right.
Ooh. Which is out on Steam yesterday. And coming to PS3 and 360 in July, what is it, July 10th on PSN, and then the following day on... Xbox 360. Yeah, the following day on Xbox.
So your review is live, right?
It is.
So what are your what's like?
Yeah, what brings it to an 8? Is it too long? Here's Greg Miller's concern.
Yes,
playing it at events, fun for little events. Seems like it might get tiresome the further I went.
Not at all.
Okay,
it's not that at all. Really fun. It's only 5 hours long. It took me 5 hours to play, and I could totally play more of it. Like now they've laid the foundation for this, you know, interdimensional puzzle game. I could totally play more of that. Sequels or downloadable content, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, made by Kim Swift, one of the creators of Portal. It's not as funny as Portal. It's trying to be, but it just doesn't have the same wit and zing to it.
I mean, Portal, that game was so well written. And those guys, if you read like the final hours of Portal 2, you know, or anything, any interviews that those guys have done, they killed themselves writing it. Yeah. I mean, they were under so much pressure and stress to like really work and rework that script. And, you know, they're just the writers of that game are kind of geniuses, you know.
Big ups to Jay Pinkerton.
Yeah.
It's Eric just not. Paul. It's not on that.
No, he doesn't listen to our podcast. Jay Pinkerton does that. Okay. So Jay Pinkerton gets a heads up.
Okay,
he's. It's screw just not you, on Eric. The same level as Portal. And also, while the gameplay is really fun, you know, when you're in a room solving these puzzles, you know, it's just like Portal. You're going from room to room using your abilities to get past these obstacles, and everything surrounding that is just really empty and lacks detail. Mm-hmm. Like you're walking through the same hallways over and over again, passing the same books, you know, all throughout the game. You know, so just. The environments, you're in this one mansion throughout the whole game over the five hours, and the environments weren't given as much detail as the actual gameplay. But the actual gameplay is super fun.
But it's still great.
And the ending was really bad. The ending was a huge disappointment.
Oh, that's weird. So,
that's where I arrived at an 8.0.
Yeah, but I saw you, I saw you playing it, and the puzzles seem very, very clever. Like, right? If you want more first-person puzzling, like, you know.
It feels just like playing Portal. Like,
right.
Very much so. And it's good. Some people were complaining about the first-person platforming. I didn't have any problem with it, but I was playing with an Xbox 360 controller on the PC, and it felt really good with the controller.
Yeah. You're also a pro.
Yeah, I'm a professional. So that's that. PS3 and 360 players will get to play that on July 10th and 11th, respectively. Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
This is Luke Wilson.
Oh, we got a picture in the back of the pile.
Oh, yeah. Ooh! Hey! Greg is so excited. Of course, listeners, remember you can always reach us at gamescoop@ign.com, just like Luke Wilson did. I think the famous Luke Wilson.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Assume.
Certainly.
He says, I'm a young gamer. Oh, I wasn't around.
Luke, you're not that young.
I wasn't around when classic NES games came out. My local retailer sells old school NES games. I have a $29 gift card to there. So I want to know, which one should I buy? I can only buy two. Okay. Castlevania, Mega Man 2, Double Dragon, Final Fantasy, or Excitebike.
So this is actually something I think about a lot.
really? Which of those five games should I buy?
No, I think about it a lot. I think about everyone talks about like having an appreciation of the classics, but not all NES games. Like, this is hard to articulate. Like, there might have been a game that was better when it came out, but then it didn't age as well, so it's not better now if you didn't play it originally. Like,
sure.
The original Legend of Zelda, if you've never played it before, is, you know, clunky and kind of hard to play and hard to go back to. But some games, like, you know, I don't know, like Punch-Out or something, like, that's very easy to go back to. It's still just as playable as it ever was. Mm. Even though when it launched, you know, if you played Zelda when you were 8, you know, it was probably amazing.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know how old I was.
So I played the 18. Hell out of Excitebike. That game holds up very well.
Well, so Excitebike is really cool for the track editor.
Right.
You can, like, build your own track and then ride through it. But I don't remember. I don't think it lets you save.
No, there's no battery in
Excitebike. You can't save the tracks.
So, to me, I mean, instantly, the two games that jump out, obviously, are Castlevania and Mega Man 2.
Mega Man 2 is a must-buy.
Yeah. So, I don't think Castlevania on the NES is. I played that
not
game.
Not the original, I don't think.
It's right?
If it were like Castlevania 3.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But well, like, Castlevania is like...
I like the original. It's hard as hell.
It is hard, and you're like, it's so awkward to control. Like, once you jump, you can't, like, you're jumping. Like, you're committed to that jump, and that feels weird to us.
That's the one that jumped out at me as a game. That game was amazing when it came out, but I feel like if you didn't play it when it was new, that would be a hard one to go back to, and I think you would find it clunky.
Also, the screen flicker on the NES is really bad. I remember.
Yeah, Mega Man 2 has bad screen flicker, too, but I was just playing Castlevania in the office 2 days ago, impressing people with my myriad skills because I was capturing footage for it. Nice. I can beat that game, you can beat that game in like 25 minutes if you know what you're doing. But he'll probably be much harder for him. The one game I'd stay away from in that list is Final Fantasy, not because it's a bad game, but because the battery is almost certainly dead in that cartridge, and so he won't be able to save his game. So,
and I play through. Yeah. I love Final Fantasy 1, and I play it a lot, but I play it on my computer when I can have save states. Like, if you actually need to go back to you might lose a lot of progress by, you know, being at the end of a dungeon and then dying. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very sort of not friendly in that way.
Yeah, I loved it back in the day.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. Is that, you can only save in an inn, is that right?
You can only save in town, but then you can buy the like tents and save on the world map.
It's been a long time since.
In college, I started playing it again when I was a junior on my NES. I started just playing it for no reason, and then I went to, you know, I played it for like a couple hours. I like turned my NES off. You know, you hold the reset button and you turn the NES off so the battery doesn't erase itself. And then I came back and I was like, shit, the battery's dead. So then I kept my NES on for days while I was trying to play it, and I almost did it, but like the NES ended up freezing.
Double Dragon, the NES version, I loved it when I was a kid, but it's actually a pretty shitty port. Multiplayer. It's only a one player game, which is like co-op was the whole idea of Double Dragon.
That's why the Sega Master System version Double was Dragon. The best.
And also, I never noticed this when I was a kid, but the NES version can only handle two enemies on screen at one time.
Yeah.
And they have to be the same enemy. So you're only fighting pairs, like clones. You're only fighting clones throughout the whole
twins.
Twins. You're only fighting twins the entire game.
It's one of those things you'll never notice, but once you see it, you can't unsee it.
I know.
Huh.
Yeah.
And also Bimmy and Jimmy.
Well, that was Double Dragon 3. Bimmy and Jimmy.
I mean, if he's dedicated to those five games, I'd say Mega Man 2 and Castlevania. If he can go outside of that box, I'd say Mega Man 3 and Castlevania 3 are the games.
I would say Mega Man and Excitebike.
Yeah. Of these five, you got to get Mega Man 2. I guess it's a toss-up between Castlevania and Excitebike.
I wonder if there's any reason, like, why, you know, like, Super Mario Bros. 3 is one of the best games ever made, ever, and it's still just as playable today.
Yeah,
like,
that game's fantastic. Why Excitebike though? I mean, this is
what I wonder.
This has always troubled me since I was a kid because we had all these games and Excitebike was one of them, and I used to play it. I never really cared much for Excitebike.
Really?
It was fun to play, but like it's an early NES game. Like there, it's I don't feel like I disagree with what Justin was saying about Zelda because I think Zelda is totally playable still. The second Zelda is fucking much harder than the first Zelda.
That's a really weird Zelda.
So, I mean, it's just like, I played Zelda as a kid, so I can go back and still play it. I never played Metroid 1 as a kid, so then when I tried to go back, it just didn't feel good. Like, mm-hmm.
Metroid's the first Metroid's hard.
It's very hard, yeah.
But awesome. But very rewarding.
The music in Metroid is so crazy good.
In Metroid 1? Yeah, yeah. It really is. And that's amazing. That's why I love Zero Mission, because it remixes those tunes. Yeah.
If you are a glutton for punishment, play Castlevania 2 Simon's Quest without a walkthrough.
What a horrible night to have a curse.
Yeah, probably horrible. Probably impossible to play without a walkthrough.
Just make sure to kneel down with the white diamond equipped next to that rock so the tornado takes you away.
Poor Greg cannot be part of this conversation.
I play like Master System. Who wants to talk about Ghost House? Where's Levi?
All right, moving on. This is Lazybones 9000. Hey, dudes. I was just wondering how the phrase "pleased to enjoy" came about. Myself, and I'm sure others included, I love English. I think it's just the cutest thing ever. So "pleased to enjoy" is just like a very common sort of English phrase that you'll see in Japan, maybe on the menu at a restaurant or something.
So, Damon, what is English?
English is the delightful sort of confused English that a lot of Japanese people will pronounce. Yeah. Japanese, to their credit, they know a lot more English than Americans know Japanese.
Oh, yeah.
But a lot of times they'll get words wrong, letters wrong. We'll see a no smorking sign.
Yeah, that was a great one.
There's so many. "Let's get panda" is an English phrase that we saw on a T-shirt in Japan. The guy was wearing a T-shirt that said "Let's get panda." Awesome. Let's get panda.
I want that shirt.
I know.
There's so many shirts we wanted.
Was the motherfucking
Beethoven? It was a drawing of Beethoven's. It was just a portrait of Beethoven on a shirt and it said "Motherfucking Beethoven." And then there was shark. Nice to meet you.
And then there was this one. God, what was this one? I'm going to get this wrong, but it was crazy. We were in a McDonald's in Japan, and this young girl was wearing this T-shirt. God, she must have been 9 or 10, and the T-shirt said "XXX fuck bucket" on it. It was unbelievable.
That's awful.
Yeah. English is one of my favorite things too. I had the shirt. Is it English.com or whatever?
It was English.com, yeah.
Whatever the big site was, I bought a shirt from there that was bright red and cheerful and colorful and had a rainbow on it, and it said "I hate myself and I want to die."
Yeah.
Which is, I'm not sure, that's actually a Kurt Cobain lyric. And
what's a song, I think.
Right. A B-side or something. I'm not 100% positive that that's even English to begin with, but I did own that shirt.
The game Bubble Bobble starts with "Let's make a journey to the cave of monsters."
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
What about, wasn't it Klax that said "It is the 90s, yeah, and it is time for Klax"?
It is the 90s, and there is time for Klax.
Yeah. Klax.
And that's not even a Japanese game.
No,
and there is time. It's there's time for it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Greg, here's a Lego Batman Vita question.
Okay.
This is Andrew Fisher.
Hey, Andrew Fisher.
I work at GameStop and recently picked up a copy of Lego Batman 2 for the Vita. It wasn't until I had got home and played the game that I realized this wasn't the same version as the PS3. I saw Greg's recent video describing the differences. Felt terrible knowing I had screwed up and couldn't return my game. The question is, why didn't the Vita get the same version as the PS3? Is it because the Vita's game cartridges aren't able to hold enough data? Greg, I would love to hear your opinion on this.
Yeah, all we can do is hypothesize at this point. I've talked to WB about it. I haven't been able to get a solid answer out of them because, of course, WB is the publisher. Yeah, Warner Brothers is publishing it. Traveler's Tales is the people who... There's Traveler's Tales and there's Traveler's Tales Mobile, right? That is a... There's a different division of Traveler's Tales that works on the handheld versions. So, don't have an exact answer for why. Could it be that the cartridges aren't big enough? The Vita's not powerful? I can't fucking imagine that, seeing as how the Wii is running the open world version. And if it's on the Wii, it has to have been able... You could have ported the Wii version over, at least, you'd think, yeah, right?
It's a good point.
Yeah, but I would think that it's still people are getting their feet under them with the... how the Vita works and how you're going to do Vita stuff. I think, we've talked about it before in the show. Madden this year is not, the Vita version is not content complete with the PS3. There's no cross-save functionality. They had already done the Lego Harry Potter on the Vita, and that was pretty much a launch title. And it was one of those things that again was a ported over DS version.
I checked that out. That was actually the most I've ever played a Vita, unfortunately, was playing Lego Harry Potter. And that was the PSP and DS one on the Vita, which is kind of unconscionable.
It's definitely, I think we're still at that point in the Vita's life cycle where it's way easier for developers to do that. They've been porting things to the PSP for a while now. They know how to do that, especially their handheld department, right? You figure the handheld department already knows how to do that, no problem. So when you have the different part of Traveler's Tales working on, hey, we're putting out the PS3 version, they don't know how to do it over. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that changes with time. How do you change that with time? Don't just bitch on the article. Write into them. Tell them that you're doing this. Tweet at them. Let them know. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. A lot of people in my video and article were you saved me all this money, thanks, and blah, blah, blah. And that's great, and I'm sure they see that. But a more direct way, and not in a mean way. Just to say, hey, just so you know, I'm passing on your game because of X, Y.
Show up at their office.
That nope. is the opposite. Don't do that.
This is Matt Western. He asks, with Microsoft and Sony definitely showing off their new consoles and all the games that go with them next year, is it safe to say next year's E3 will be the best one ever?
It's going to be a
good one.
It's going to be a crazy hectic.
I don't know about best ever. I mean, there's been plenty of... I mean, was... You know, just because they announced a new console, like, was the first time they showed off the Xbox 360 the best E3 ever?
Yeah,
like,
kind of.
I don't even remember.
The years do all blur together.
Yeah, totally. They all run together.
Yeah. It's even harder to remember which is which.
Yeah.
I don't know. It'll be a fun one for sure.
Yeah.
It'll be
there's going to be a lot more excitement leading up to that one and a lot more crazy shit at the show, I think.
And it'll also depend on how much they're able to keep secret.
You see, and that's the big thing. That's one of the, I think, E3's biggest...
it's hard these days.
Exactly. There's so many blogs and so much international stuff and so many embargoes, and somebody always inevitably breaks it. Somebody always leaks something or does something thinking they're doing the right thing, and that's what fucks everything up.
Well, and there's so many sophisticated... Like, people know when it's usually public information, like when they're ordering these giant factory orders from China, and it's like, well, Microsoft's ordering... You know, whatever, these 200 gigabyte hard drives, what could they be for? Like, they're obviously for a new console, and then stuff leaks out that way, too. Like, you know, hopefully there's still some magic and surprise left.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be.
Tough to do, though.
I'm sure there will be.
This is Kenny Dungar. Said he offers the word moribund.
Mm. Good word.
In terminal decline or near death. It's the definition.
Did you look it up?
Moribund that he's provided.
No, he didn't think we would know it.
He's correct.
Kenny says, Damon, on the last podcast, you said the Xbox is all but dead in Japan. You can sound super sciencey and cool if you use moribund instead. Love the show. Keep up the great work. Thanks for the tip, Kenny. I'll try to work moribund into my daily
daily moribund vocabulary. Is almost dead in Japan.
Nope.
that's not it.
Close. Getting closer.
That's not how it works.
Work it into your vernacular.
There you go.
You did good on the homework tests. You got the synonyms, the anonyms, you're all set.
I would imagine Colin would appreciate the word moribund.
Yeah, I appreciate the word
moribund. You like a good word.
Like
myriad.
Myriad
like
is a great word. That started as a joke between me and Mark Ryan that just got fucking way out of hand. I like the word myriad. Casey made fun of me for using the word posit.
That's not bad at all.
Well, you just don't hear it that often. You know?
You should hear it more. And maybe you will.
I posit that you should hear it more.
Oh, very good.
This is Jackson Lee. He says, I'm just writing in because it just occurred to me about 90 seconds ago that Suda51 is actually his real name, as in 51 in Japanese is Goichi, to which Suda51's real name is Suda Goichi. Just wanted to share my moment of random enlightenment, and hopefully you guys will mention it so other listeners who didn't know before would finally realize Suda51 is not just a random name plus a number.
Cool. I guess
that's interesting. I didn't know that.
I'm more enlightened now.
Yeah.
Ooh, this is a long one. This is Bruce Carty. He says, love the show. Long time listener since episode 40-ish. Big fan. Here's my question for the Scoop crew to debate. Will the Wii U launching with current gen specs possibly delay the launch of the next generation of hardware from Xbox and or Sony? Here's some additional context for consideration. The original Wii significantly extended the life of the PlayStation 2. Due to Wii games getting ported to PlayStation 2 that would not have otherwise been developed. This development did not delay the Xbox 360 or PS3, but these were already announced and in production. This time around, it is quite different, as neither Sony nor Microsoft have announced their new hardware. So could the Wii U spark a bunch of new IPs that could easily be ported to the other two consoles, especially with Smart Glass and the PS Vita support on their respective platforms? And will the possibility of selling games on three platforms versus two make third parties... interested in this generation of hardware versus the next? Install base has to be weighing on publishers' minds as well, as a new gen means starting over. These are all pretty good points, Bruce.
Yeah, that was very thoughtful.
Yeah.
That actually is a very good point. He's absolutely right that when the Wii launched, you would see there would be two versions of a game. There would be the 360 and PS3 version of a game, then the Wii and PS2 version of the game, which was not good news for the Wii, by the way. But, you know, it happened nonetheless. So... I don't think it will delay the new consoles.
Yeah.
But... I think he's saying...
Well, because the PS2 had run away with last generation. That's why that system was around for 10 years. Like, I don't really see the PS3 being around for 10 years. I don't see the 360 being around for 10 years. I see the Switch being
pretty... 360 has already been around for 7
years. Yeah, but I think when the new console... My hunch is that when the new consoles come out, we'll see a quicker jump to the new
generation. It's around for at least 8. So it's like...
But people are ready. Like, I don't... Yeah, exactly. I don't see... After the 720-year Durango has been out for 2 years, I don't see people still making 360 games.
Then it would be 10 years.
No, but... Let me finish my sentence. When it's been out for 2 years, I don't think people will still be making 360 games like they did for PS2.
I'm just saying, at that point, it will be 10 years old, so it would have lasted for 10 years. So that's the only point I'm making.
But I'm saying it'll be dead. Okay, whatever. I've said my piece.
Okay.
With Sony in particular being like the beat that Greg and I cover, I think that a lot of frustration has been coming up for me, and I know others, with Sony's dual support of PSP and Vita, which is fucking killing the Vita in Japan. And I think that Sony eventually, and if they don't, I'm sure they already realize that this is a huge mistake. And so I think that with PS4 or whatever the fuck it's going to be called, that they will cut off the PS3 when the PS4 comes out.
So
and
why?
I'm sorry, go.
Well, I just have a question for you. So if the support of the PSP and Vita is killing the Vita, how come the support of the PS2 and PS3 didn't kill the PS3?
The PS3 was killed.
Okay.
The PS3 sold like shit.
Yeah, it was walking dead for a long time.
I mean, the PS3 was not even respectable really by anyone until like 2009.
So it was killed and then revived.
Yeah, and then revived because it had great games.
It was a lame duck. It was just came out and it was just waiting for a price drop. Everybody, that thing got announced and everyone waited for a price drop.
Yeah, I mean,
nobody was in that big of a rush to fucking play Resistance.
No way in hell I was going to buy a $600 console. Yeah. But Sony has the trump card that no other studio really has. I mean, Nintendo has it to an extent, although it's not as vast. Although maybe the licenses are more important. Sony has 13 studios that only make PlayStation games. And when all those games started coming out or whatever, then people were more compelled to buy PS3, Uncharted, etc., and so on.
Sure.
But I think I kind of disagree with the notion that we need new consoles. If it was up to me, and I could just dictate everything in the video game industry, I would say we don't need new consoles. We certainly don't need new consoles. And look at the Last of Us. You know, like, the Last of Us looks really great, and and I'm sure it's going to be a very compelling game for a lot of people that are into Naughty Dog games, whatever. It's like, what? The only thing that PlayStation 3 really needs is more RAM in which games like Skyrim can run. But otherwise, like, what do we really need a new console for? If anything, I think that these guys are definitely holding on, these guys meaning Sony and Microsoft, to the last generation because of what he said, which is install base. And third-party developers are certainly releasing these games now, like Watch Dogs, for instance, because they need to get in on it now because we are, like he said, we are resetting, and who knows how that's going to pan out. So I don't think we need new consoles, and I wish we weren't getting them, but we are.
The thing he's overlooking, too, with the Wii PS2 comparison is, I mean, third-party people were doing because the PS2 was so well installed, right? And Wii U, Smart Glass, all this jazz he's making these comparisons to. With the, like, Zombie U, like, mentioned they might think about doing that, you know what I mean, and bringing it over. How successful is that going to be? Then how successful is Smart Glass going to be? How successful is the Vita at that point? When does it start to make sense? Development time, all this other stuff. When Wii games were coming to PS2, it's because, yeah, there was a million PS2s out there. Nintendo notoriously not good with third-party developers, I'd imagine. And how much shovelware are you going to get to? Like, I don't think even if they were porting stuff over from, oh, this Wii U game is coming over here now, is it going to be more like Raving Rabbids and crap like that nobody wants to play? No offense, Raving Rabbids, but you suck. And I hate you.
Yeah, you do kind of suck. I don't know. These are interesting times.
Next year will be interesting. Right now, it's kind of like, meh.
I think it's interesting.
I think this fall will be interesting because I want to see how Wii U does. Like, I still think Wii U is not going to do well. So, and I don't care how much it costs, I don't think it's going to do well. So,
yeah, I'm a notorious, on GameScoop and elsewhere.
Notorious.
Duran Duran.
Notorious Wii U. I'm down on it. I don't like it. But it's always, they're not doing any. Wait till the television commercials start. Wait till they start getting the end caps at Target, and all over the nation. Like, that shit's going to be everywhere this fall. And that won't be the case for PlayStation.
No,
and
no,
Xbox,
you're absolutely right. And I also said when I wrote a story about how Vita is just getting clobbered, and I talked about how I made a prediction that Vita was going to do great. And I was wrong about that prediction. And the one major thing that I walked away from was, like, you can't underestimate Nintendo. Because they have $5 billion in the bank in cash. Plus, they are making all of this money. They showed a loss last quarter, which is very rare, and I doubt that they'll show another loss. So, in other words, they can take huge risks.
Yeah.
And they can actually eat all sorts of money to get those things out there. But I just don't think that anyone cares about the Wii U at the end of the day. Like, I think that, like, the Nintendo hardcore cares about it. I certainly want to play some of those games, and I'll probably buy one. But who really want, like, who has this relic sitting in their entertainment system. It's covered in an inch of dust. It's this white box that they bought. They have this Wii Fit thing under their coffee table. They haven't played it in 3 years, and they're like, I don't want another one. You know? Like, I just don't see how they're going to recapture the essence of what the Wii was.
Nintendo got everyone to buy a Wii.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Can they do it again?
No.
Can they get them to buy another one?
I took an Uber cab last night.
And
the guy was picking me up on the corner, but I noticed the car was already there. And so he came out of this electronic repair shop, and he had his Wii. Uh-huh. And he was getting his Wii's power button fixed. It's like, all right, cool.
Did you talk to him about it?
No, I was tired.
Okay.
I just want to be in the car, listen to some music at home.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. I mean, it's you know, credit to
the K-pop station, sir.
Oh, Jesus.
Jeez, no. God damn.
I know what we're talking about there. Bruce, that was a really good question, Bruce.
Yeah,
Bruce is from Canada, wants us to say hi to Mitch and Charles.
No.
Good day. Oh, wait, that's Australia.
He says, if I'm ever in San Francisco, hopefully there'll be a meet and greet and we can discuss life over a few beers.
And burritos.
Yeah. Let's do that. Final email comes from our number one fan in India.
Oh, good.
He has a complicated name. He says, a.k.a. Chatty. We'll go with that.
Okay.
This is our number one fan in India. His name is Chatty. Says, hello, GameScoop. I've made some IGN fan art.
Oh.
I made it using Photoshop. I'm not sure whether it qualifies as fan art or not. And I just kind of sort of made up a cool IGN logo here.
Can I see it?
Yeah.
Like if our movie got rebooted or whatever, and get that that steel look screwed into the wall.
It's
a black wall, red IGN.
It's a cool logo. I wouldn't have any idea how to make that in Photoshop. So nice job, Chatty.
Yeah, it's very nice. I think Greg's a little disappointed, not because the logo's not nice, but because he probably thought it was going to be a picture of a naked girl or something.
I
know, I'm fine with it. I'm always happy just for visual aids in general.
It's good.
Greg can't read.
It's a good shop. It's good with the shops.
That is all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Colin. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, dear listeners. I leave you this week with a song called Open Space by this 22-year-old Russian kid named Artie. It's a really fun dance song. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop, and we're out.
Come get some. Beware, I live. IGN GamesCoop.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.